This is Queen Elizabeth I, speaking to you from the 16th century. It's a Woman Crush Wednesday. Join Professor Buzzkill as he crushes on women from history who deserve more fame and glory.
All right, it's a Woman Crush Wednesday. I'm Professor Buzzkill, as always, and with me is Dr. Corey Bean from South Plains College in Texas. Dr. Bean, how are you? Thanks for being on the show.
It's an honor. Hello, Buzzkillers.
Yes, they're out there listening. And today we want to talk about another important woman who doesn't receive the sort of attention that she should from the history books. Who is that?
Madam C.J. Walker.
Madam C.J. Walker.
The first self-made female millionaire who also was African American.
Oh, right. Okay.
And she did this at the early 20th century when, at the height of Jim Crow, mm-hmm. you wouldn't think she'd be able to do
right,
that.
Right.
She was born the daughter of sharecroppers in Louisiana. And sadly, at age 7, she was orphaned. So she moved in with her sister and brother-in-law. And from all accounts, he was abusive, and probably to escape the abuse, she got married very young, at the age of 14, to Moses McWilliams.
Yeah.
And 3 years later, at the age of 17, she had her only child, whose name was Lelia, and soon after, her husband died. So here she is, a black woman in Jim Crow South, they had lived in Mississippi at mm-hmm. the time, who has to take care of a daughter.
Yeah.
So the only thing she knew how to do at the time was take in laundry. You know, she was a washerwoman, or sometimes they're called laundresses.
Right.
And she needed to do something to help raise her daughter. So she moved to St. Louis, and her brothers were barbers there.
Right.
And that's kind of an important part of the story, because this is how she gets exposed to hair care products.
Right, right.
She experimented with them. She was exposed to them. And in the 1890s, when she had moved to St. Louis, her hair started falling out.
Oh.
And, you know, this was very common for people back in the day because, you know, Professor, we didn't have indoor plumbing. A lot of people didn't have indoor plumbing. The lye and the soap that you used to treat your hair was very harsh. People didn't have good nutrition. People had a lot of issues, physical issues, and sadly, Sarah Breedlove, that was her real name. Of course, I'm going to call her Madam Walker.
Right,
because it's easier for Buzzkillers to keep up there.
Uh-huh.
But she, like a lot of other women, started losing her hair because there was a lot of lye in the soap at the time, harsh chemicals. We didn't have indoor plumbing. Most Americans didn't have indoor plumbing the late 1900s, early 20th century. So there was a lot of poor nutrition, poor health habits, and she just started losing her hair in clumps. And this, of course, you know, had a lot of effect on her self-esteem. And she had joined her church there in St. Louis. It was called the African Methodist Episcopal Church.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very active in the church. She got to know a lot of these very prominent, prosperous ladies. And these ladies, you know, inspired her to take care of herself and, you know, have a little more self-confidence, look a little better, because she wanted to be like them.
Right.
And so she said, you know, I got to do something about my hair. So she started looking around at the products that were available to her. And one lady had a company who was a black woman too. Her name was Annie Malone. And she started using Miss Malone's products. And sure enough, she became one of Miss Malone's first sales agents.
Uh-huh.
And as she is selling the product, she, you know, thought to herself, hey, I can do this too.
Right.
So there at her brother's barbershop, she started tweaking, you know, what the ingredients in the products. And as you can probably imagine, eventually when she comes up with her own products, her and Miss Malone have a little argument. Miss Malone said, you stole my products. But that really wasn't the case, because there wasn't anything proprietary Miss Walker's products and Miss Malone's products.
Okay.
There wasn't anything special about them. They all kind of had the same items in it, petroleum jelly, sulfur, something called capsicum, and it was just a way you, I guess, mix the ingredients. Uh-huh. So she started selling her own products after she moved from St. Louis to Colorado. She moved to Denver. And in Denver, you know, she started selling, while she worked as a laundress at the, on the side, she started putting these products together and selling them. And she started selling them door to door. Again, she got involved in her church. She would, at this time too, is when she married Charles Walker.
Oh, okay. Charles, and that's where we walked. Yeah.
You know, which is how she got, that's how she got her name.
Yeah, because we have a few name changes in this show.
His name was Charles Joseph Walker. Right. Mm-hmm. His name was Charles Joseph Walker. And in 1906 is when she married him. And to make herself sound a little more prominent, to give herself a little more validity in her company, that's how she started saying, I'm Madam CJ Walker. And it stuck. And her husband was in the newspaper business. So he was really savvy at the marketing aspect of her products. They put ads in newspapers. They started a mail order business. They did public demonstrations.
So is that how they sort of started building the business, was through marketing and, yes. and promotion?
Yes. And if Professor and all the buzzkillers out there, if this sounds kind of familiar, this is kind of like what Mary Kay Ash has done in Mary Kay. You know, a lot of people have similar styles, right? They train you to be an agent, or they train you in the products like Madam Walker did.
Yeah.
Then you go out there and sell the products to your people.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, it's a really good marketing way to market it, and it makes the company more money. And that's exactly what she did. And I'm curious to know if maybe Mary Kay Ash and some of these other companies, maybe Tupperware later, Advocare, and Scentsy, I'm wondering if all of them looked at Madam Walker's model and said, hey, I'm going to do that, because it seems very vaguely familiar.
Yeah, they might have. I don't know when that sort of marketing plan started as a thing, but I think the Walker business was a pioneer in it.
She totally was. And maybe she borrowed some of these ideas from Miss Malone, but she definitely took it to the next level.
Okay.
If Miss Malone started it, she, you know, perfected it.
And how quickly do they start making money?
In 1906 is actually when her company began. And her husband, pretty quickly, her husband and her worked as a team. But then he started saying, you know what, I'm happy with the money we're making. And she didn't want to rest on her laurels.
Yeah, yeah.
She said, you know what, I think we can continue this, make it bigger. And sadly, they divorced because he didn't have the vision that she had. And after they divorced, she moved to Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
because in Pittsburgh at the time in 1908 was a big hub for railroads.
Yeah.
So the shipping of her products would be easier to distribute.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And she started a place that she named after her daughter, Lelia College, that trained what she called horticulturalists. I'll try and say that better.
Yeah.
And they were trained to work on black hair and sell these products and promote her business.
That's why knowing her name, her daughter's name early on was important for the development of the business.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And then in 1910, she moved to Indianapolis, which she did that because there was a large black community there. And also it was another strategic distribution location. It was, you know, in the middle
of the country.
She could distribute everywhere. And there was three large black newspapers there. And she was just getting savvy about putting these ads in papers, and people would respond to them and contact her. And she started the Madam C.J. Walker Hair Culturalist Union of America while in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
She traveled giving lectures. She did demonstrations. And in Indianapolis, she opened a manicure salon, another training school. She had a manufacturing place. And at one point, Professor, she employed 3,000 black men and women.
3,000.
That's including salespeople. 3,000.
Yeah. And this is all within 20.
This is all amazing.
It's all within I'm trying to count up the years here, but this is fairly quick. This is 20 years. She goes from building it up to be a very big business. She's clearly a genius.
It is. And again, I can't stress enough, this is the middle of Jim Crow.
Yeah, that's right.
This is a very difficult time for African Americans. Difficult mm-hmm. being an understatement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at one point, they think her company was making $7,000 a week.
Wow.
And in today's money, if we look at it today, that's about $170,000 a week.
Yeah, that's big time.
Her company was making.
Yeah, that's big time. We're making that kind of money, but that's at the Buzzkill Institute, but that's big time money.
Well, I'm jealous if you are. And she not only was making all this money, but she became very politically and civic minded.
Well, that's what's so interesting about this. She just doesn't keep bankrolling it. She moves out into other things. Sounds like she's just literally too smart to stay still and stay in one thing.
She did. And I think she realized and understood her place in the black
uh-huh.
community
uh-huh.
and in the United States. I mean, one of the things she did is she started giving money to a lot of charitable causes. She
right.
gave money to restore Frederick Douglass's home in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
She gave money to start a black or what they call colored YMCA there in Indianapolis.
Yeah, yeah. Even in Indianapolis, there used to be different ones. They were segregated. Yeah.
Yes. She became involved in the anti-lynching movement.
Right.
In 1917, there was a very bad situation in Illinois where several black men were killed. And
yeah.
she and others in the black community tried to petition President Wilson at the White House. He would
mm-hmm.
not receive her.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a cause that she felt very strongly about. Even when World War I started,
yeah.
she was very concerned about black soldiers and the black colonies in the colonies in Africa that were German. And she and W.E.B. Du Bois tried to go to Versailles and get their say. Can you imagine? At the Versailles conference, they wanted to be there so they would have a say in what would happen in those African colonies that Germany had lost.
Wow, wow.
But
and this
course,
is from a woman who was
to.
Originally a washerwoman in the American South, originally.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
that's
and
something.
I guess, Professor, one of the really interesting things about her is she just didn't, it doesn't seem like she felt limited in anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, that's amazing because you would think in the early 1900s, in Jim Crow, the way, and even, you know, the way she grew up, I mean, her family had been sharecroppers. She was a risk taker. You know, she didn't know the word no.
Right, right, right.
And
sounds like it.
She said, I can do this. Now, yes, the backing of having all this money and having all this success probably said, hey, it's my role to do this. Maybe it's my
right.
mission. But she just, I mean, she was so risk taking. And I think that's one of the coolest things about her.
Well, also,
she was willing to relocate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's right. As you say, two or three times, major relocations. The first one, at least, was not an easy relocation to make.
And we don't see this a lot at this time in history. Well, Professor, she left money to the Tuskegee Institute. She left money to the NAACP's Anti-Lynching
All right, okay.
Fund. She had a really awesome home built in Irving on Hudson, New York, that at the time cost $250,000
wow.
to build. This was in 1918. And it had 34
mm-hmm.
rooms. And the great thing about it is she would host a lot of prominent black leaders to her house. And she would, you know, I think she was kind of like the hub of the black elite community in New
right.
York, her place was. And this home now is on the National Historic Preservation Trust,
yeah,
I believe. And so, you know, that's kind of a cool place. I don't think it has a lot of tours, but you can do a
virtual
tour.
Okay, we'll put the link for that on their website.
Anne. But by the time she died in 1919 of kidney failure and hypertension.
Mm-hmm.
But when she died, she had as many as 40,000 sales agents working for the company.
40,000?
40,000. Yeah, she had agents not only in the United States, but she had people buying her products in the Caribbean, in Central America. And she just understood way before today. You know, Professor, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that understand how, for, especially for women, your appearance
right.
does volumes for your self-confidence.
Right.
She got that way before the rest of it, uh-huh. anybody else uh-huh. did.
Okay.
And she always said, you know, your hair is part of your appearance and can improve your self-confidence.
Right.
But, you know, she was out. She wasn't without her critics.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who said, well, she just sold hair straighteners.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that's a controversial topic.
Yeah.
With,
oh,
when
yeah.
you talk about black hair. But she said, no. She goes, I am a hair culturalist.
Right.
I grow hair.
Right, right, right.
And, but she, you know, she did sell products that did straighten the hair. But her thing was, do what you want with your own hair. I'm going to sell you products that will keep your hair from falling out, will make your hair healthier, and will make you feel better about yourself. To her, that is what it was all about. Mm. And women bought these products, and from all accounts, they seem to have worked.
Yeah. Oh, that's certainly true. I mean, I did look up a few of them.
And now there's more attention to her. You know, in 2016, the Sundial Brands with Sephora came up with a collection in honor of her that have a lot of natural ingredients, and I believe they're still selling those products.
Oh, okay.
And then the great Octavia Spencer, she is a fabulous actress,
yeah.
is going to play her in a movie that is based on a biography that her great-great-granddaughter wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to get the buzz killers, and all Americans are going to find out now more about Miss Walker. And she is not going to be a secret anymore. She is going to be up there with Oprah and other accomplished women,
yeah.
rightfully so.
Well, that's wonderful, wonderful. We'll put the biography on the Buzzkill Bookshelf. We'll publicize the movie when it comes out. And it only remains for me to thank you so much for being on the show and enlightening us about this very important person.
Well, thank you for having me. This was fun.
Okay, and we'll say out to the Buzzkillers out there that we'll talk to all of you next week.